Welcome to the December 4th, 2024 meeting of Law Enforcement Public Safety Committee. Roll call, please.
Chair Hansett?
Here.
Chair of the Legislature Criswell?
Here.
Deputy Chair Hewitt?
Here.
Legislator Clinton?
Here.
Legislator Maloney? Legislator McCullough? And Legislator Walsh?
Here.
So we've got some. Is McCullough is here?
Yes.
I saw him.
Oh, we're ready. Have a seat.
Yes. Okay, we're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
If you would lead up, or? Lord. For you to notify on the United States of America. And this area, I'd like to form the stance for our nation, for the cannabis, for the election, that that's wrong.
Approval of the October 28th, 2024 special meeting and November 6th, 2024 regular meeting minutes. Any discussion or questions?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. Please note that Legislator McCullen is in the room. So we're going to start with a presentation on Ulster County Public Safety Radio System Upgrade, Department of Emergency Communications, Emergency Management, Director Erickson.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to introduce Chris Carney from NYSDEC. NYSDEC is a consultant for Ulster County on the Public Safety Radio System. Also, representatives from Motorola is Chris Meyer and Jonathan Williams.
Welcome.
As you know, we've been working on the public safety radio system for quite a while. So kind of want to talk about where we are currently, what we're moving from, and where we're trying to go with the resolution that's in front of the committee this evening. So I'm going to turn over to Chris Meyer, Chris Farney, start with the presentation, and we'll move through it.
Good evening, everybody. The other Chris. My name is Chris Carney. As Everett said, I'm a senior consultant. Is that camera on?
Yeah,
stand in front of it. Okay. I'm a senior consultant with NYSDEC. We're a not-for-profit consultant firm based out of New York.
Then you'll be able to be seen by people who are using that camera.
So similar to what Everett is saying, I'm going to take you through kind of where we are today, how we got here, and where we'd like to be in the future. A lot of the focus of the conversation is coverage, and coverage we have today, and what we desire for coverage in the future with this upgrade. So our current radio system here at the county consists of multiple different systems, split over different systems. There are 7 VHF paging systems, 6 of which are simulcast, which means when a dispatcher keys up, 6 towers light up at the same time. There's one site that is not simulcast, it's treated separately. 5 simulcast low band systems for fire dispatch, 5 non-simulcast VHF systems for EMS, and 3 VHF site system for law enforcement. So disparate systems, different frequencies that spread across the county. They all have different footprints for different users. The county contracted in 2019 with Motorola for an upgrade to the radio system. It increased fire and EMS from 5 sites to 10 sites, so it's double the site number. For fire and EMS, it added one additional site for law enforcement. It added new radio consoles, which have since been installed, and a new 911 phone system, which has also since been installed within the last year.
That's correct.
Yep. There's a proposal from Motorola that'll increase the fire and EMS sites an additional 6 sites. Law enforcement will increase by 12 sites and paging by 8 sites. There's additional infrastructure in there for national interoperability channels, which meets grant requirement, and upgrading to a new radio console and the latest version of Vesta, which is that 911 phone system.
Could I just ask a question
about that? Of course.
I've been told that there are different frequencies on the different radio bands that are used in these different places. Will that national interoperability cover that, or is that relevant to what you were presenting on that slide at all?
Yes and yes. So the national interoperability channels were a requirement to get the grant funding. So the state's going to give you grant funding, but you need to install these national interoperability channels. And they are just that. So these channels, if I'm on that national interoperability channel one here in Orange, here in Ulster County, or if I'm in Orange County, Florida, or if I'm in California, that channel one is channel one no matter where I'm at. Okay, so if we are bringing responders down from Columbia County or up from Orange County, you can turn the system on and everybody can talk together without having to be programmed onto the Ulster County new radio system.
Thank you.
That's good. So there are a lot of challenges that we have run into in the last, we've been gathering these requirements for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, to try and get the system that we need here for public safety. Some of the challenges here up on the board, the FCC licensing VHF frequencies are very scarce and they're restricted by incumbent licensees. So it's a finite resource. We might stand up a tower site here in Kingston and that radio signal is going to travel. We have to make sure that we don't interfere with other users that have that same frequency in Connecticut or Massachusetts, because that radio signal will definitely travel. So VHF is because it's so popular and so widespread, it's very difficult to license, which we have done within the last 6 months. We've secured VHF licensing. The design difficulties due to the terrain made tower sites very difficult, especially up in the Catskill area. I don't think I need to tell you, I mean, you all live here. I don't need to tell you, you have mountains in Ulster County, and they're very difficult to contend with. The problem is most of us build tower sites on the mountains, but the roads are in the valleys, right? Trying to get that radio signal down into the valleys has become very difficult, especially up in the Catskills. We have some restrictions building in the Catskills. A lot of it's parkland, and we can't build up there, right? So in determining coverage requirements, we use call for service data. So what we did is we reached out to Everett's group and we downloaded the call data out of the CAD system for the last 5 years. And it's essentially just a map. It's literally just a map. Every one of those blue and red dots is a call for service. Somebody at that location dialed 911 for help. And it helped us narrow down where we needed coverage within the county. Okay, so instead of everybody says, I want coverage everywhere, right? We can give you coverage everywhere. Anything's achievable at the right price. But I'm pretty sure you don't want to pay all that money to cover your mountaintops, right? So we were able to define exactly where all the major populated areas, obviously Kingston here, down 209, the 9W corridor. If forgive me, this is 28 corridor here. These are all areas that we identified that we needed to cover, and I'll show you why here in the next slide, the next couple of slides. So here's your existing tower sites for your law enforcement. You have Sam's Point down here in the south, Illinois over here along the Hudson River, and Overlook in the north. That is all you're using for law enforcement communications today.
Okay.
Fire and EMS. Again, Sam's Point, the Kingston site, the Taunchy site, and the Bel Air site way out in the west.
Illinois down the bottom.
And I missed Illinois, I'm sorry. In Illinois along the Hudson River. Okay. The new system, we took the fire and EMS channel, and we took the law enforcement channel, and we put them on every single site. And this is tentatively what is going to look like in the new system. Right? It's a total of 15 transmitters with one remote receive, which is down here at the Worthboro site, which is owned by Sullivan County. Okay, so this is where I really want to talk about coverage. So this is the coverage that you, that law enforcement works with every day, portable coverage, meaning, you know, the radio on the hip. Okay, this is the coverage that they deal with every day. You can see a large gap here in the, I'm just going to steal space for a second. Large space 209 corridor through the Ellenville area. And a lot of the Catskills is not covered, right? In the 2019 contract, this is what coverage, the guaranteed coverage was looking like for Motorola. Again, we have this large hole along the 209 corridor. You know, if we go back to the calls for service, it's a pretty busy area, okay? So the 209 corridor, this whole southern piece here, is not covered. The 9W corridor, which is very busy, I'm sure I don't have to tell everybody that. And the Catskills, some additional coverage, but we still have some pretty big holes. The 28 corridor is also, also has limited coverage. So with the added sites, this is what our coverage is now going to look like. Okay, again, portable, on the street, be able to, you know, that officer needs a call for help. There's more reliability that someone's going to hear that individual.
When we started reviewing this, we also found it very important because law enforcement does do a lot of work off the portable, right? So the response is in the car, but then when they're out of the car, they're then now working off a portable. So we found it very important to ensure that we had good portable coverage.
What's the difference between a darker purple and a lighter purple?
I'm going to try and keep this at the 10,000 foot level. If I start getting technical, somebody can give me the high sign. So the system is actually within the design. It's split because of licensing. It's split into essentially a north-south zone. They're going to be patched together as a single system. So the user in the field is not going to know any different than I push this to talk and I let go to listen. They won't have to change channels. They just know that they're going to be on police one. Okay, what you're seeing is the composite of both coverages.
Got it. Yeah.
And you'll see that theme through all of these images. Same thing you'll see with the coverage holes. You're going to see it's similar in every coverage map. So here is your mobile coverage for law enforcement. Pretty solid. You still have some areas up in the Catskills that are lacking coverage. This is the 2019 coverage map, improved, and then the proposed map over on the right. Again, additional coverage in the Catskill. And I should speak a little bit about kind of this jut out here. I guess there's a fire department that covers outside of Ulster County often. It's their primary response area. So we included that area that they cover within those requirements because even though they're leaving the county, they still have to be able to talk back to the dispatch center.
And when you say LE mobile, that's like mobile phones or
in the, radio in the car.
Yeah, we're radio in the car. So
well, radio.
Yeah, we talk about portables. We're talking about on-hip radio. When we talk about mobile, we're talking about the radio within the vehicle.
Thanks.
That's happening.
So, okay. So this would not be coverage that would be available to the general public. It's available to law enforcement and first responders who are part of that network.
Correct. This is for the public safety radio system solely.
Thank you.
Here's your existing fire and EMS portable coverage that they're dealing with today. Again, I'll take a note of that big hole in the middle of the county there, the 9W corridor. Here's the 2019 contracted coverage, and then here's the proposed coverage. Considerable more coverage. You know, it covers more in the southern part of the county, the 209 corridor, and up along the 28 corridor, and most importantly, like this big gap 9W is probably pretty important. So that's fire and EMS, and then here's your mobile coverage. Again, I think mobile coverage is pretty solid. This was originally designed for mobile coverage, but you know as well as I do, firemen don't work within the fire truck, and law enforcement is out of the car more than they're in the car. Right, maybe not on days like today. It's a little cold out. But, so mobile coverage is pretty solid. Again, it makes good coverage better, but again, I want to focus more on the portable coverage. And then in my personal opinion, what I think is the most important is existing pager coverage. So in the middle of the night when Ellenville Fire Department needs to go out the dispatcher with a set of tones, right? And it makes a device go beep, beep, beep and wakes them up in the middle of the night. If that doesn't work, we're not getting a fire truck on the road. Okay. So probably the most important coverage of anything I'm going to show you tonight. So existing coverage, contracted coverage, again, a lot of the same holes, and then future coverage. Again, using that calls for service to see where we're busy. I should also say that was overlaid with SAM data, which is essentially mailbox data. So we can identify where people live, where people need help the most. So you can see large areas, you know, this is a lot of the state land, not a lot of houses, not a lot of people up there. If there's an incident that occurs there, there are deployable assets that are available to the county. We can wheel it up there, turn it on, and provide temporary coverage up there for the incident. You know, Peak of Moose Fire recently is a great example.
Yeah, Peak of Moose Fire, we brought in Cell on Wheels in. The county just purchased a CRD through FirstNet, so we'll have that as well. So there are deployable assets to increase the coverage within the mountain areas when needed.
Questions?
Does that cover the legislator for the towns in the western part of the district up there? It is, as you've described it, very mountainous and largely state land and some city lands. Does that coverage give us penetration to the fire departments in Pine Hill, Big Indian, and the residences nearby where those firefighters would reside?
Yeah, we're actually putting
a handful of slides
here. 30 minutes.
So we have two sites up here, Bel Air, which is up on the ski slope, and we're going to build a site kind of on the other side of that ridge there, Pine Hill, which will help cover this 28 corridor, and then Phoenicia will also be shooting some signal back up 28 to try and cover that area as best as we can.
If you cover along 28 there, you've covered 80-85% of the residential areas are within 100 feet of 28.
Okay. All right. Any more questions for me? Okay. I'm going to turn it over to you.
It seems like pagers would be excessive and redundant. Are you still using pagers?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so paging, when we use paging, we're talking about a miniature pager, and that's how we notify firefighters that there's a call. That's the primary means of notification.
Mm-hmm.
So
why not a cell phone with a ring?
So the cell phone is actually a backup, okay? Cell service, we can't guarantee, but the paging, we can build this out and then push that.
Yes.
Thanks. Yep.
It's also a dedicated network that has redundancies built in. Everyone knows the first time there's a major incident, FirstNet goes away, it's your cell phone coverage. If you lose it, gets overwhelmed, we take it out. These systems are proprietary and private, so they're controlled by the county. Chris Meyer, Motorola Solutions, I'm the area sales manager. I've been with Motorola about 7 years. Before that, I was in state and local government for about 20. As Chris alluded to, there was a contract executed in 2019 for a mobile-based system to expand the system into a 10-lane site system that was mobile-based. Again, after that was done, the county and Motorola and NYSTEC started working on expanding that to gain portable coverage, which was the goal of the county after that time. This current proposal in front of you is a 16-site system, building off of what was proposed the first time. It also includes all upgrades, as you know, technology changes. We're changing the console positions. We're upgrading to the latest and greatest that we offer. And there's also an increase in an improvement, latest Vesta deployment system, so for the phones. This also includes all the national interoperability channels that Chris alluded to, so some of this is repetitive, I apologize. But that allows you to go for more grant funding, and if there's a major incident, first responders coming in can talk to each other. Let's see. This is the phone handle, the call handling piece. Again, some of this was installed. The console positions have not been correct, or some of them have.
So consoles have all been sold, this has been installed, but this includes the additional positions for the government operations center.
Right. So this contract would have additional positions and an upgrade of the current positions to our latest access console system.
Can I ask a quick question about the grant funding comment that you made? So is that something that you can give us some recommendations on, where to look and what would be?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we worked with the county and NYSDEC.
So we currently do receive grant funding, our operability funding. Mm-hmm. We do have that $6 million grant that was allocated to the radio system already. We continue to look for, and NYSDEC and Motorola always point us in direction and say, hey, there's this additional grant funding. Right. They notify us. And we try to apply for it.
We
apply for it. We try to get it.
Right. We also work with the county to say, this is what we're looking for. We'll provide proposals. And then they give those to the state and say, here's what we'd like to apply using grant, get grant authority for it to expand the system. As I mentioned, this is moving the previous contracted equipment up to the latest and greatest from us. This is for the communication vehicle that the county is purchasing. So this would add communications to that. I think you referred to that when going to the hinterlands, you could use something like this to connect and dispatch from it. It has radios in there, connectivity to the radio system, and would provide that remote utilization of the radio system. Questions? As I mentioned, we can go back to this one. All of this is an expansion, and when you're buying the radio system, you're seeking coverage and capacity. The first iteration of this was mobile-based, so you're in the vehicles, it worked well, it had decent coverage. This iteration would provide that hip-level portable radio coverage for your first responders, especially law enforcement, as they're the ones that are usually out of the cars by themselves in the middle of nowhere. So,
can you talk to us a little bit about maintenance?
Maintenance. You have a contract with
ESS.
ESS, yep. To maintain the system. So as part of this, all the equipment's being upgraded, and then you would use your local shop, ESS.
And to expand on that, in 2024's budget, starting in June, Chair Cabarrus had created the radio technician position. That position will be filled by the end of the year. Within this, too, is training for to send the person that we hired to training to help maintain the radio system and do other maintenance on radios within that particular fleet.
There is a one-year warranty on this, though, from acceptance. So it's part of the process. If we're fortunate to win your business, we would build the system. It would be installed. The county would test it. We would test it to make sure it's living up to what we're saying it does. It's a requirement. And then once the county says, yes, we're good, that starts a one-year warranty period on all equipment.
Sure.
Questions, thoughts? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it.
So, yes. I just want to say one thing. It's really easy to put dots on the map. It's a lot more difficult to put towers on a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And we're engaged in doing a substantial amount of feasibility work with respect to some of the areas in Shandaken. We're in design right now for a facility in Rosendale. And you have local government approvals that you have to think about. You have adjoining neighbors that you have to think about. And you have environmental issues that you need to think about as well. I would also say that how important is this? The city of New York recently held a press conference with respect to making their lands available for these kinds of facilities, recognizing how critical communications are in the mountains to essentially ensure that they have adequate and safe water supply within the Catskills. So that's a really helpful addition to the lands that we can look at, where we can actually now start to look at DEP lands in terms of where our towers can be located. I can tell you that we're in construction on a tower on Tonti Mountain. That tower has actually had a easement on it by DEP, and they granted us the necessary approval to build a tower on their easement.
Thank you. thank you, gentlemen, for the moment. Director Erickson, is there anything else that you want to update the committee on?
On this
or anything else?
I mean, I have my report. If you want me to go right into that, I can go right into that. So thank you for doing allowing us to do the presentation. As Dennis said and everyone else said, this is it's a really big project. Moving forward, it's something that the first responder agencies in the county have been waiting for quite a long time, and moving this forward is really big. Just to go into my monthly report, this month, this past month, November, the 911 center took in 9,234 calls. That's 308 calls a day. Just to break that down, that was 5,332 incoming 911 calls, 3,882 10-digit calls and 10 text messages, which it further breaks down to 1,938 fire calls dispatched, 2,115 EMS calls dispatched, 4,090 police calls dispatched. We deployed to the White House fire on White House Road in the town of Denning from November 8th through November 12th. That included managing 85 agencies at that incident with thousands of firefighters throughout the incident. We responded to, our battalion coordinators responded to 63 calls for service this past month. We did a total of 12 fire investigations, and we hosted some training. One of the trainings with FDNY that was funded through the legislature, which is money that the legislature works with the Fire Advisory Board to earmark every single year for outside training. That was on boat response. We kicked off our discovery post program for the fire service. We had 14 to 17 year olds that attended that. And then we also did the elected officials training. We completed that with seven elected officials. That was that went very, very well.
Can you share who went into a burning building?
Chair Hansett, along with the executive, Comptroller Gallagher, Supervisor Freer, Supervisor Parity. Who am I forgetting? See, now you put me on the spot.
That's all right.
Definitely going to forget somebody.
Johnny Frano, councilman from Highlands.
Councilman Frano from Highlands. Very New well, Paltz. Very well attended. Yep. The mayor from New Paltz. Very, very well attended. We look forward to doing it in the future and getting more attendance. So
it was excellent. If anybody has the opportunity, I was very hesitant to gear up and go in, but Director Erickson said I should, and that I wouldn't regret it. And it was. Truly, I mean, I always had respect for all of our first responders, our firefighters, but that put it at a different level. So thank you. Director, would you
video?
he's got some photos.
I got photos, no video.
Would you like to give us an update on anything that you want to share? We welcome you tonight.
We've had a nice, easy year. Everything was kind of smooth this year. We just finished our outside inspections, which is good because
waste and measure.
Waste and measure. It's freezing out there, and now we just have a few indoor scale inspections to go, and then we get to start all over again. So just the process just keeps going and going.
It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you.
You're never here, so we're very happy to have you.
Thanks.
And he has a resolution actually.
Yes.
So, Under Sheriff Mullins.
Good evening. We have an Ignite graduation, which I don't know if anyone remembers the Ignite program inside the jail facility where basically we take the incarcerated individuals and give them class and training and stuff like that, and then they finally graduate, and we have a graduation coming up. So anyone that is interested in attending, please do. It's on the 10th at 10 a.m. at our headquarters, which we'd love to have show up.
What time?
And support.
What time?
At 10.
About 10 on the 10th?
Yes.
Okay.
10's going on here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It'd be great to have anyone that wants to come. What else? We had a really busy month. I know our drones were assisting at the fires a lot, which was great. The drones have been getting used a lot for that. We finally broke ground on our impound yard that's been going on for about a year and a half in contracts, and we finally got some movement on that. What else do we have? Deputy Steyer pulled out the final boat out of the water, so there's no boats in the water for the remainder of the year.
Sad day.
I mean, if an emergency does come in and there's no ice, we can still deploy them because of a storage facility that we're able to get to keep the boats out of the weather.
And we just started contract negotiations with some of the unions, so we're going to be doing that moving forward. So other than that, like I said, we had a really busy month and looking forward to the end of the year and everyone staying safe.
Thank you.
Department of Probation? Not much. I just wanted to report we did do the Sojourner Truth, an evening with Sojourner Truth at the Restorative Justice Center on November 26th, which was very well attended and got perfect reviews. So good. And District Attorney's Office.
Right now, a lot of trials and hearings going on, and basically wrangling with the budget issues, but nothing else to report, but I'm willing and happy to answer any questions if anybody has.
Thank you. And we also have the Public Defender's Office.
Yes, I just wanted to give an update on the Centralized Arraignment Part, also known as the CAP Court, because last year at this time, the Counsel at First Appearance program was really in a shambles. We were really struggling. And with the advent of the CAP Court, which launched June 17th of this year, we have absolutely addressed the issues that had arisen. I mean, there have been hiccups, and we meet every single month. We have a committee of all the stakeholders, and we meet once a month to address those things. But I really want to shout out to the Sheriff's Office, because I have to tell you, they work so hard with us and for us, and it has really been amazing. And the communication, I think the CAP Court has been great for communication among the agencies, between the DA's office and the PD's office. But the Sheriff's Department just really goes above and beyond in making sure that it works. So thank you.
Thank you.
And that's my report.
Thank you. Good evening. Okay, we're going to take a couple resolutions. We're going to start with the first one. We're going to take a couple out of order. So we're going to start with Resolution 527. Approving the execution of a contract amendment for $123,341 entered into by the County Family of Woodstock Department of Probation.
So this is just extending the contract that we already had for 2024 into 2025 to run the juvenile diversion program through Family of Woodstock for our juvenile delinquent population. It's the 180 program.
Okay, discussion or questions? Legislator Maloney.
How many kids, when did we start this program?
Can I refer to Michael on that? Because I can't remember the exact date.
Since 2013.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
The program started as a result of a task force that was set to be trained in restorative justice. We were a part of that. There was a state grant for targeting 7 to 15-year-olds, which we wrote for. The target population was 7 to 15-year-olds that had committed a felony or a misdemeanor. We served 54 kids in a year and a quarter. 51 of them did not reoffend. The program has been very successful. We have numbers for the entire time since then.
How many kids were offered the program? You served 54. How many were offered the program?
That was back in 2013. I don't think I can answer that. But
oh, last year. Oh, 2013. What's that?
2013, 11 years ago. That's when we started.
But over the last year and a quarter, you're saying that?
No.
That was the first year.
The first year. In 2013, we started a program that lasted for a year and a quarter and served 54 kids.
So
you could probably
over the last year, how many kids were served over the last year?
This past year, it's been 58. So we don't have any numbers in our contract or anything, but this year so far, we've served 58. And to answer your other question, so what happens is the youth will be given an appearance ticket from a police officer, and they'll show up at probation, meet with the intake officer, and the officer will talk with them about their options. So a lot of the times they're offered this program as one of their options. But I don't know. It's kind of on their end. Maybe Valerie could speak more to it, but probation's the one that sends it to us. So I don't know who is being offered and who's not being offered. I think a lot of the time they're being offered diversion.
So I have the 2024 third quarter stats, which was
up through September 30th, there was two, and I'm sorry, this kind of comes out weird on the cell phone, but three school referrals, two police referrals, 44 probation referrals, and three community referrals. So it was a total of 51 for the first three quarters of 2024, and 33 at this point was closed successful as of the end of September.
Yeah. I wasn't done, Gina, but just a little longer. So you don't know how many kids were offered. So when they're told to go down to probation, are they told that it's optional, or are they told they're basically entering a program?
To report to probation, they're given an appearance ticket by the police, and that is not optional. I guess, well, it's required. They have to report. It's almost like an, you know, arraignment. They're being charged with an offense. And at intake is when, depending on the severity of the offense, if it is a severe, like a felony offense, we always speak to the county attorney to make a determination of whether that should go into court or we can do a diversion. But the majority of the cases, if they are misdemeanor, we offer some sort of diversion service, one of which is the 180 program.
Would every appearance ticket in the county for a child under 18 be with that? They would go to probation for that?
Correct.
Every single one?
Correct. Unless,
that's
I
state.
Shouldn't
that,
say.
That's if, a mandate of the state?
Yeah, that's the way that the family court system works. I think the only time that would probably be not like if there was a serious, like a homicide or something, that youth would not come to probation first. Any of those serious ones or attempted murders, you know, we've had juveniles who've shot somebody. So they usually, the county attorney steps right in and petitions them immediately. So they're right in front of family court. But that's very, very rare. And yes, the majority of the juveniles, their first appearance is at probation.
Everyone or just
yes.
The majority? Everyone.
Well, not the ones that are murderers. Yes, all the other ones, yes.
Because the issue that I've had talking to five different parents is that we've gone through over the last couple of months is their experience was not good. And there's a lot of these programs around the country, and when you start reading, there's as many negative articles as positive, and a lot of the negative that you're reading are the exact experiences that we had five families have here. And that's where they were never told it was optional. Their kids absolutely were not for this program. And they were basically forced into pressured for weeks. Even after some of the parents said, we don't want to be part of this program, they were threatened and intimidated. They called other family members. They pitted husbands and wives through divorce against each other, all to keep kids in this program. And I've seen the texts, I've seen the emails, and I know in certain terms these parents were lied to as well, told that it was a mandatory program, that they had no choice. So when these kids are getting an appearance ticket to go to probation and they get there and they're automatically put into the system in this program, it's really a bad look. And could do more harm, especially to these kids, than what they were picked up for, which was virtually nothing.
Can we get clarity on that?
Is it mandatory? And
it
what?
Is not, and they are told at intake of all of their possible options. As I had said last month, I was the intake officer at one point, and I would tell them all of their options, what the possibilities are, what could happen in each and every stage, what could happen. You don't have to do this. This is not required. And in fact, if the youth stated that they did not commit the offense, we wouldn't even offer diversion because we don't want them to admit to something that they didn't do. So if they said, I didn't do this, then we would automatically petition it to the court because then it's up to the family court system to determine whether that would be through like a fact finding, which is similar to a trial and all that.
That's just not what happened. And that's not what these parents were told. This is law enforcement. This is a member of law enforcement in the county. This is a woman that works for the City of Kingston School District. These are legitimate people that all had the same exact experience.
Chair Criswell?
Go ahead. I'll let legislator.
No, that's it for me.
Yeah, I just would say that having worked as a pediatrician in inner city areas, I have gone into a room and had a conversation with a patient and a family, a young person and a family, and then gone out and had the attending physician come back in and ask what was said in the meeting we just had 5 minutes before. and it was completely different than what I remembered as having happened. So we're hearing a description of something that happened for families, and there is their understanding of what happened, and then there's another viewpoint. And we're third or fourth or fifth party out from that. So our ability to determine what really happened is non-existent. That moment in time is gone. So I think that the problems that some families are reporting need to be addressed. But I don't think they can be addressed by our assuming that we know what happened, assuming what was right or wrong. We hear a presentation of the system. And the worst misunderstanding that I was involved in was exactly one of these situations where there was something mandatory. So there is something mandatory. That appearance ticket is mandatory. And sometimes trying to get across that to people, the whole thing can sound mandatory. So there's a lot of potential for misunderstanding, especially a tense situation like this with big consequences. And I appreciate that the families care and want assistance in dealing with it. So I guess I would just ask the committee to think about what is the appropriate forum and mechanism for addressing those families' issues and any structural considerations that would emerge from that.
I'd like to understand a little bit more about the actual intake process. When a youth comes to you and you give them these different options and they choose something like the 180 program, do they then sign something that says, I have agreed to this program, or is there any sort of paperwork trail?
Back when I did it, we didn't have the 180 program. I cannot honestly answer that. There may be, but I don't know for sure.
Is that something that could...
I don't know. I don't believe there is anything that they sign. I think they just, agree to the program, and then we get to
it. Is that something that you might consider implementing, some sort of an actual document that says, yes, I've agreed to this program? Because then that would clear up a lot of the, did I agree to it voluntarily, or was I forced into it? I think that would clear things up.
I think that's a great idea.
Quick question, if I may follow up, is I'm curious about the reporting on the 180 program specifically. Do you do some sort of quarterly reports or something where you're talking about your successes and your challenges and that type of thing? And if so, can you tell us just a little bit about it?
Sure. Yeah, we do quarterly reports, and we're dating back to 2013. And we cover all kinds of different areas, including a lot of times the kind of work that we are doing with the youth while they're in the program, and through referrals. A lot of times we will refer out to other services, we'll cover that. But yeah, it's usually the milestones, which is intake, the restorative circle, and completing. So those are sort of the milestones that we report on. And then any of the life skills or other things that they may have done, volunteer opportunities, that kind of thing, we're reporting on that. And then any referring out to other services. So that's what's included.
And what do you do when you have a youth who is not satisfied with the program, or it's not working out? How do you address that?
So at any point, the program is voluntary, and that's something that is part of built into the philosophy of restorative justice. So at any point, if they don't feel like it's a good fit, we can send it back to probation, and they'll usually send it to the county attorney. But if it's the kind of thing, if you're saying it's someone who's really not committed to doing anything, then, we try to work with them. But if they're not willing to engage in the process, then we would say, this isn't really a good fit for you, and we're going to send the case back to probation.
Thank you.
I already actually reached out to Director Nacarado and asked her for some quarterly information moving forward on the programs. So we already discussed that. I did reach out to some of the families that was brought to my attention. I also reached out to some school districts. For example, I didn't hear this from one family per se. I heard it through another family. And I'm just going to give one example. She had said that somebody else that was in the program was told that they can't leave the state with their child. Can anybody speak on that?
Wouldn't be us.
Yeah, I would say that I know that I've been working with probation through this program and through other programs working with juveniles on probation for a long time. And I know that on probation, sometimes they do have restrictions where if you're going to leave, they have to get permission from their probation officer. But that wouldn't
be. This was definitely directed at this program.
Yeah, in this program, everyone is assigned a probation officer. So we're family of Woodstock. We would not ever be telling them that, but it's possible that their probation officer. But the thing is, they're assigned a probation officer, but there isn't terms. So there's really no reason why they would say that. If they were on PINS or if they were on probation supervision, then they would probably need permission from their probation officer. But I would think with this program, probably not. And that certainly wouldn't be coming from us.
I can say definitely, but I don't think they would. So I don't know.
So when somebody comes in for intake, are they given written materials? And that shows the programs? Because sometimes it's a lot to absorb initially.
Definitely a lot to absorb.
So are they given?
Honestly, I don't know. I can't answer that. I could find out.
Thank you.
I'm not aware of that. Back in my day, we did not have anything.
Legislator Maloney.
So we have five kids that, and I've talked to all the parents and have permission to generically speak about things. We have five kids walk into a vacant building on a church property that most of them were members of the church of. Damage was done. The door was open. It was a vacant property.
No, I was told, excuse me, I was told when I spoke with the mother that it was locked.
She told me it was locked, the building.
I go to the church there. There's virtually no door on the building. We're finally getting rid of the building, but there was no damage done, whether the door was broken and open or something, but no damage was done. That's according to the priest as well. So these aren't really kids that walk in with no record, that walk into a vacant building and then walk out, aren't without doing damage, probably aren't much for this program, I would think, especially with no record. We had the second in command of the public defender's office come in and basically say this is going to be thrown out. But yet these kids were pressured, their families were pressured, and they were never explained. What was explained to them was that do you not do a house inspection?
That's probation.
We do. It's not a house inspection. It's a home check to verify that the child lives there. That's all it is. It's not a search. It's not an inspection.
Into their house. Yeah. It's like a house inspection to me when somebody says they have to come into your house. Several of parents told me it was implied that there may be travel restriction while they're in the program. They were also told that they were also pressured once they said they didn't want to be in the program anymore. There was pressure. Even other family members were called. The wife was called to say, do you know what's going to happen if you run the risk and roll the dice to go to court on this? That's not presenting them with accurate legal advice. That's trying to keep them in the program. All five families are saying the same thing. They were pressured and told all of the same things. And these kids do not seem to be what is supposed to be in this program. The parents actually showed up to speak to us themselves and were not allowed to speak. Next month rolls around and we have a legislator basically saying it's not their fault. They just don't understand what they were told. They're obviously mishearing and just not understanding what they were told.
Point of order.
That's a wonderful thing.
Who speaks is at my discretion, and I don't allow
public comment. So that has nothing to do with this meeting tonight. So.
Legislator Maloney,
anything else?
No. It must be amazing. I'm sure the parents are watching. I know I was told it must be so frustrating to see their tax dollars at work and the unfair representation of their own cognitive abilities to understand what is being said to them about their children and their options, and then us not to allow them to speak, then to misrepresent what actually happened to them and what was said to them. All right, but on we go, and I'm sure we'll end up approving this contract.
One clarification, the public defender's office does not have jurisdiction in these matters. This goes to the family court. Last meeting, Cliff Owens did present from the public defender's office. However, he was here in his own capacity as a citizen, not as a member of the public defender's office representing Liz.
Which he wasn't clear to me.
Correct.
he told me he was here on behalf of the public defender's office.
And
so,
as we said, and I know Valerie has so corrected, public defender's office has no jurisdiction in these matters.
No, which is why I thought it was valuable for them to talk. They don't have any jurisdiction, but they also don't have a horse in the race.
They also do not know the matter of the case, and they are not purview to the case.
Pretty sure they probably got a better feel than you or me or almost anyone at this table for that kind of a program.
We're into legal matters that are not within my jurisdiction.
So I have reached out to the family members, and I asked them to please forward me any information that they had in an email, and I'm waiting on that. I haven't gotten that yet. I did ask that and followed up with some text messages actually today for that. So, you know, I will continue to look at that and read that and reach out to the families. So, Chair Criswell, did you have your hand up?
Yep.
Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I'd just like to clarify that I don't know what happened in those circumstances. And there may be somebody in the system or more than one person in the system who is interacting with families inappropriately. And so having a method to inquire as is happening is really important. So I am not at all assuming anything in the ways that were portrayed by this legislator. So I think that our role is to help solve problems and to find out the locus of the problem. It often can be a miscommunication. And when miscommunication takes place, that's never one person. That's not the way I understand communication. Communication is with more than one person. So if a miscommunication happens, I think it helps for all parties to take responsibility and to come back and try to correct the miscommunication and try to prevent any harm. So I appreciate that there is a concern. I don't think that this concern means that the entire program has a problem. We haven't seen that. And we've seen a lot of successes from this program. 80-90+% from the first year it was in operation and continuing on. And so I just think it's important not to lose sight of that. At the same time, we address the fact that families feel like they were injured, and I think we should address that. I would rather address that in a different forum with appropriate people.
Mr. Berg?
I just want to make sure that the committee is aware of what the intent of the program is. We've served over 400 kids since we started. Most of them, I think only 24 have reoffended. But more important, the intent of the program is twofold. One, to prevent children from getting records, which will damage them forever. And second, to give them support and give them some positive in their lives that they can restore the damage that they did by committing the crime. And I think this is an essential program. We're very proud of it because what it's allowing is kids to come away not feeling bad, not holding their head down, but rather having accomplished what was charged to them, namely to fix the relationship that was damaged. And the numbers are very positive. I don't know about these five cases, but I will say this. Any parent has the right to call probation and say, I don't want to be in my son to be in this program. If that wasn't told to them directly, it should have been and will be.
I just want to be on the record at how unfair I think it is that the people that are receiving the programmatic services aren't allowed to speak, but the paid employees of, you know, in order to support and put out positiveness about a program that the least of us and who we're technically supposed to be working for, our constituents, aren't allowed to talk about their experiences in this program, but we're letting the head of the company wax poetic about the program. Doesn't feel right to me.
Legislator Maloney, I am always open. You know that, and I tell you all the time, reach out to me. I will sit with those families, and I think my colleagues would also. I don't think that this is the place to do it in a committee meeting, but I will always reach out, and they are welcome to speak with me. So, and I had said to you, I wish that you had reached out to me before rather than it's a surprise at the meeting. I'm always available. So, I don't think, I don't think that the pro,
the day before.
Okay, so you could feel free always. If it's the day before, 5 hours before, an hour before, call me, fill me in. Anybody? Did you? No. I will continue to for the emails from the families. I don't think that this program would willingly try to be a negative experience or to be a negative program for our youth. We think that as a county, we have to look at it and hope that these programs are to be of assistance. And again, it is not mandatory. And if it was portrayed to anyone that it was mandatory, I asked for names. I haven't gotten them yet because I will continue to follow that line. And who told them that it was mandatory? I went to the director. I've asked her moving forward. I would like quarterly reports on, you know, who is in these programs, successes, who dropped out, who said no. We've given suggestions on families should be given paperwork of what your options are and that they are options and they are not mandatory. So any other discussion or questions? Okay.
I'll make the motion to adopt.
Okay. Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion is carried. Okay.
Joe was a no.
He was a no?
Yes. So we have one more for Department of Probation that we're going to do a little out of order. So resolution 679, approving the execution of a contract for $67,106 entered into by the county, Family of Woodstock, Department of Probation. Director Naccarato?
Yes, this is, we did a RFP
for the Batterers Intervention Program, and it has been awarded to Family of Woodstock. So this is the contract for the upcoming year to continue to run the Evolve program for those convicted of domestic violence.
Discussion or questions? Okay. A motion to adopt the resolution?
We'll make the motion.
Second?
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Thank you. And now we are going to take one more out of order. You sure you don't want to say, right? A lot of fun. 702, resolution number 702, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets for funding for the Petroleum Products Quality Testing Program, Weights and Measures.
Yeah, it's actually an amendment to a contract that we've been doing for 30 years now. Basically, the state will tell us to pick up 24 gas and diesel samples a month. We'll send them off to a lab. They'll test to make sure it's the right octane, to make sure the percentage of ethanol is in it, or if it doesn't have any ethanol in it, it's not supposed to. Like I said, 24 of those a month, and they cover all expenses, everything we get, all benefits, everything is covered by that contract.
Okay. Discussion or questions? Nobody's got a question for him.
why 24?
That's a state. It's depending on the amount of gas stations in your county. Okay. So let's say Dutchess County, I think, picks up 36 because they're a little bit bigger.
Okay. Good question.
What do they do with the gas after it's tested?
Believe it or not. It's by a company out of New Jersey. I think they use 4 tenths of a gallon. We pick up 8 tenths. So whatever's left over, if they don't have to run a retest for maybe it's off a little bit, they'll run a retest with it. Otherwise, they take it to their vehicle. So I do believe.
Do you weigh it before they put it in their vehicle?
Oh, they can. But yeah, on the average, they use like 4/10 or 5/10, but they leave a little extra just in case they have to run a read. They otherwise goes into their vehicles that pick up the samples.
Very good. Thank you. Can we get a motion to adopt the resolution?
Second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Thank you. You're free to leave, but you can stay. All right. So we're going to go back. Let's see. Is it one? Resolution 632, adopting and issuing a NEGDEC under 6 NYCRR, Part 617, State Environmental Quality Review Act, SEQR, by the Ulster County Legislature for the construction of a government operations center to be located at Paradise Lane, Town of New Paltz, Emergency Communications, Emergency Management.
I'd like to defer to Director Doyle from the climate.
Director Doyle.
Thank you. This is a requirement. The legislature declared its intent to act as lead agency back in 2022, as I recall. This is defining essentially that the construction of this facility will not cause a significant impact on the environment. The legislature was given an extensive amount of backup material associated with this. The county did necessary work as it relates to the environmental work. It also did necessary work as it relates to community character and zoning. We do have a determination by the Town Board of New Paltz that we are granted immunity from their local zoning statute. And we continue to work with the Department of Environmental Conservation with respect to our remedial action work plan program as it relates to brownfields.
Okay. Any questions or discussion?
Legislator Nolan, can you repeat what you said in Environment Committee yesterday about why we've gone further than normal?
Well, it's essentially what Director Doyle just said, that for this project, it's a special project. And so the process that has been gone through is very similar to the process that would go through if we issued a positive declaration and did a full environmental review. We did not do that, but we've done virtually everything we would have done had we done that. And we're allowed by law and these particular laws and exemptions to do it this way. So though I generally prefer there be a positive declaration in that full process, in this case, we already have a project that's going to take 4 years, 5 years from start to finish. And to add those elements in with multiple jurisdictions would unnecessarily, I think, complicate the review to get the same level of review and perhaps less than by just doing it this way, which was using this mechanism that I normally don't favor, but I think works very well in this situation.
Right.
So what have we done above and beyond what we? Are we skimming deeper, or what? We've done the pesticides. We've skimmed a level of pesticides that we're talking about.
Yeah, Chair, I think Director Doyle
is waiting for your approval.
Oh yes.
Okay. So the short answer is that yes, we've done a substantial amount of testing on the site in addition to the testing that was done before. The site is in the New York State Brownfields program. We've decided to continue in that program. We don't have to continue in that program. The main benefit by being in a brownfields program is to the private sector because they get tax breaks associated with it. So in this instance, we've decided to continue. We've done the additional testing associated with that. We know what our remediation work is, and we'll continue to make sure that's done, not only with respect to the cleanup of the site as it relates to the current contamination, which is quite frankly quite common because it's a former orchard, so it's not something that we haven't seen elsewhere in the county in terms of development on former orchards. We're also making sure that we go the next step of that is to make sure that all of the workers on the site essentially are protected as well, and that's air monitoring during construction and those types of things that need to take place.
So have we done the remediation?
No, we haven't done the remediation.
That's what's confusing me, because it almost sounded just now like we have gone above and beyond with the remediation than we even needed to,
but we've done no remediation. So what we've gone above and beyond is extra testing.
So let me just put it in a sense.
Well, actually, the question, I'll ask the question because it was my colleague, Lynn Nolan, that said we've gone above and beyond what we've had to do.
I didn't say that we've gone above and beyond on remediation for any of the implementation. We were talking about the planning and review process. So you mischaracterized what I said and then disagreed with your own characterization.
No.
So I can't help you on it because you didn't understand what I said.
I didn't. And that's what I'm asking for clarity on. What have we gone above and beyond?
Director Doyle is giving you that information.
But you said above and beyond.
Director Doyle is telling you the things that led me to make that comment.
Okay.
So we've gone above and beyond environmentally on. I don't know if it was said
before, but I'm just trying to figure out what I should be proud of the county for.
You shouldn't be.
Would you like to add?
Well, I think one of the things that I just explained is remaining in the Brownfields program, where we don't have to remain in the Brownfields program, in my mind is above and beyond what we're going to, what we'd have to do if we decided that we didn't want to remain in the program. The other thing I said, by remaining in that program, we've done a significant amount of additional. We've done a lot of testing to basically characterize the pollution that's there and how to go about cleaning it up.
Another question.
If we haven't done any remediation yet, and it's a certified or whatever you would call it, New York State brownfield, why would we even be allowed to exit the brownfield classification or expectations if we've not done any remediation and it is a brownfield?
The brownfield program is voluntary to the owners.
Okay. And then and people that we're getting to do the work might do it cheaper because there's grants out there for it?
I would never characterize the idea that you're going to do site cleanup and make sure that the site itself is secure as doing something cheaper.
No.
It'll
cost the same amount. They'll do the same thing. But if the state or the feds, wherever these grants are coming from, because we've remained in the program, it could potentially be less of a burden on our county tax base is all I mean, that some of the money would be picked up by them. I'm just trying to figure out. I heard above and beyond, and now I'm hearing we stayed in a program instead of leaving a program, and we've done a couple of extra tests.
So let's just let it go. It's just we have
to go ahead, please respond.
Let's be honest.
So the site was in a brownfield program prior. There was a series of tests associated, work done with respect to that. When we acquired the site, we decided to continue in that program and follow up on the necessary responses because the prior owner hadn't completed all of the work that they needed to do to define what a cleanup program would be. So we took the extra effort and defined what the cleanup program would be, in order for us to essentially make sure that when we built the site, that we're going to be able to mitigate it as well. Understanding that the benefit to the county to essentially put itself through that additional level of review from the Department of Environmental Conservation was not necessary if we had exited the program.
So we could have exited the program upon the transition from that private ownership to us. That is where we could have exited the program. We made the determination to stay in that brownfield program at that time.
And isn't it
the additional reviews?
Is it true that we'll remediate once we move forward and get to that point of the process?
Absolutely. This determination here is essentially saying that the work that, I mean, think of this in a different context. What we're saying is that before you start construction on a project, you need to make a determination whether or not that construction will have a significant impact on the environment. Mm-hmm. What we're saying here is these are the things we've done to avoid that significant impact. We're not saying we've done them already. These are the things that we're going to do, and these are the studies that we've done, and here's how we're going to treat things such as community character, transportation issues, all of those things as it relates to the types of things. You can see this in the main elements of the negative declaration. We've essentially made those particular determinations as it relates to this, including the idea that we're going to clean up the environmental problems that currently exist on the site.
Thank you.
Mr. Nimalotti.
In closing,
I think a lot of those things maybe should have been done before negotiating such a high price for the property, twice what the owner paid before even finding out how bad it was. And then when we paid somebody that had worked for the owner to assess the property for us, it came back as in really good shape, not as a brownfield. It got environmental points, which gave it a 1-point lead. And then we paid $4 million for a property that was assessed at as it was pristine. So there's so many problems with this whole thing, and we just continue to talk in a way that's not real, but all right.
Any other discussion or questions? Okay, can I get a motion to adopt the resolution?
I'll make a motion.
Second? All in favor?
Opposed.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. We did 679.
Did
we? Yes. That was Evolve Probation. Resolution number 680, confirming appointments of Mark Cassidy and Lieutenant James Seifert to the Traffic Safety Board. These are confirmations. 3-year terms, replacing Joe Sinagra and Rob Lucchese. Discussion or questions? Yes.
I would love to improve our policy on when we see resumes and when we don't see resumes, when we confirm versus debate over a candidate. Do we know if we have a set policy on that?
Chair, I would have to defer to you.
We do not. My understanding is that confirmations, there are certain appointments, and it is the prerogative of whoever is making that appointment to present it in front of committees and the body. That's usually done with the resume. There's usually time for any committee members to actually contact that the person who did the appointment to ask questions about that. There is nothing, to my understanding, in writing that says it has to be a debate process in a committee. If that's something that the body wants to move forward, we can look at changing our way that we do confirmations. But to my, the best of my understanding, that is not in place at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other,
when you're saying debate, do you mean interview?
Interview, not debate.
So, yes, that's what I meant.
I think I put that word in the email.
Thank you.
Any other discussion or questions? Can I get a motion to adopt the resolution?
I'll make the motion.
Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Resolution 681, confirming reappointment of 6 members to the Traffic Safety Board.
I'll make the motion.
Okay, thank you. Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Thank you. Resolution 685, adopting proposed local law 15 of 2024, a local law amending the Ulster County Charter, the Ulster County Administrative Code by deleting, from the Insurance Department and amending the Ulster County Charter, Ulster County Administrative Code. So this adopts proposed local law 15, Departments of Safety and Insurance, restructuring into the Department of Risk Management. Any discussion or questions?
I've just asked on this at several meetings, and this was brought to us by the executive side of the House to look at efficiencies in government operations, and so I said I would carry this.
Any other? My time?
Yes.
Just to kind of clarify, I know there's been a lot of conversation about some cost savings that this would achieve. So the immediate cost savings on this is roughly $58,000. That is due to the fact that the safety department had requested via the budget process a new position for administrative support. That position was not carried forward. The salary for that position was $42,000 with benefits would be $21,000 for a total of $63,000. So the net between all of the adjustments results in a net savings, immediate savings of $58,000, budgetarily.
Thank you for that. Any other discussion or questions?
Sure.
Motion to adopt the resolution?
Motion.
Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Okay, we did 702, The next resolution is 710, amending capital project number 482, the countywide radio system, amending the 2025 capital fund budget, emergency communications, emergency management. Director Erickson.
Yeah, so this is based off of the presentation. This is capital project 482 to amend it 11,063,026, which is not the total cost of the change order. There's the 400 and change thousand that is operational costs that will kick in when the system goes in service, and it's spread out over 4 years.
Okay. Discussion or questions?
Chair Switzwell. 710, 712, 713, are they all the same?
710 and 712 are the same. 713 is the establishment of a capital.
I was just going to say we...
Rock'em.
710 and 712 is...
Can you just say I'd like to block the
two? I'd like to block the resolution 710 and 712.
Yeah. And then, so you a motion on block and then a
motion on the block.
I'll make the motion.
Second. All in favor of the block?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
My question is, did we get other bids?
So this is a change order to our existing system, right? So we have currently a Motorola system that we're currently using. We are expanding on that system. So that's why we went with, again, the mobile.
Thank you.
Any other questions or discussion?
I just want to make one point.
Okay.
I think it's interesting, Legislator Maloney, to criticize a director of a program that we fund for speaking highly of his own program, but we just saw a full presentation from a company that wants to land a giant contract. We give people the chance to speak because it's important for them to speak.
The point I was making, if I could answer back, was if we had somebody here that was being negatively affected by the Motorola contract, we didn't let them speak, and we let them speak, then it's apples to apples, my friend.
Yeah. It's more like everyone who goes through Hurley and can't make the call comes here to tell us about their problems. We don't have the time to handle that many complaints. We trust the people that we hire to bring complaints to us. And when legislators like you find an issue, we bring it to the table and try to find a solution.
I don't really know what you just said, but it's okay.
I think what you brought
up is important. That's
so
my point.
We have five families that were, you know, telling us some alarming things about their experience with the program.
We've continually let Family Woodstock wax poetic about the program, basically call those parents liars and not hear from the parents. It's pretty basic. It's America. There's families and kids, and they just don't matter anymore. And in a lot of different ways, but this is just another example. They sat there watching. They're all watching tonight, watching us dismiss their concerns and experiences, and then you're still hung up on the fact that I think they should have been allowed to speak.
On the block?
Motion.
Yep.
Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? They're both carried. Thank you. Resolution 713, establishing capital project number 717, Ulster County Department of Emergency Services Mobile Command Vehicle, Emergency Communications, Emergency Manager. Director Erickson?
So currently we partner with the Ulster County Sheriff's Office. We're using a mobile command vehicle that is about 20 years old. It was purchased off of a grant by past Director Art Snyder and turned over to the Sheriff's Office. That mobile command vehicle, We've been dumping a lot of money into it over the years. It is extremely small. It allows for two positions when it comes to radio communications. It allows for three positions when it comes to the meeting area for emergency management. We're looking to replace that vehicle. Every time we deploy, we run into many issues. So we're looking to build out a new vehicle that would have four radio communication positions, along with two Vesta phone positions within it, which is the system that we currently use. And it would allow for eight meeting positions on the emergency management side of the vehicle itself to be deployed to any fire, EMS, law enforcement response. We've had conversations with the sheriff's office looking to continue to that partnership in its use. So we are working with New York State OIEC to ensure that we integrate all our technology with their technology, because as the incident grows, we would rely on New York State OIEC to come in and assist us. So we want to make sure that that grows. We're working with NISTEC to consult on the radio portion to ensure that it's integrating into a public safety radio system. Within the contract is the funds to outfit, within the Motorola contract change order are the funds to outfit the new mobile command vehicle with the radio communication and Vesta equipment.
How big is the vehicle?
It is a 45-foot vehicle. It is a international cab. There's many different types. This is based off of similar to what Rockland County just built. We've also looked at what Dutchess County just built, which is more of a coach bus. We were trying to build something that has higher ground clearance. The topography of Ulster County doesn't allow us to have anything low ground clearance. So it's 45-foot long. It would be integrated with all technology, integrated into our RAM, our WAN system, our WAN network here for the county.
Yes, thank you.
Would there be any grants available?
So grant funding for the vehicle itself, no. Grant funding for radio technology, yes. So we will continue to look at interoperable grants funding through the state and work to allocate it towards the project if we can.
This gentleman's going to help us fund grants.
Undersheriff?
Yeah, we had a great meeting today with Director Erickson, the sheriff, and I about this bus, and I think it's something that's really needed. I think it's going to be a great asset to the county. I know speaking on behalf of the sheriff, he's fully behind this, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity to work together with emergency management for emergency situations.
Do we have anything similar now, or this is all new?
So we have a smaller mobile command vehicle that the sheriff leads us with. Realistically, I describe it as a glorified bread truck. It's what it is. If you think of an old Firehopper truck, that's what it is, and it has radio equipment in it. Again, it's two positions, and it has maybe three positions to have a meeting with emergency management, which this would be a lot larger, obviously, with the technology within it to live stream video of incidents that were, we used the sheriff's office drones for the Peak and Moose fire quite a bit over those 5 days. So we'll be able to live stream in, show mapping to determine, how we're going to move forward with the incident, what tactics we're going to use. So it allows us to do quite a bit.
Existing, we just ran into a lot of issues during Peak and Moose fire with our system of IT infrastructure within that unit. So
it went down within the first 12 hours of deployment. And we had IT out there and the following morning trying to get it back up and running, and it took, I would say, at least 6 hours to get it back up.
I would just say, given the size and topography of the county, certainly for my district, but for other districts throughout the county, this is essential, and it'd be nice to be in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion or questions? Okay, can I get a motion to adopt the resolution?
I'll make a motion.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion's carried. Resolution 715, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute amendment to an agreement with the New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services, Office of Emergency Management, to develop a multi-jurisdictional, multi-hazard mitigation plan, emergency communications, emergency management. Director Erickson.
So the plan has recently been completed, recently had moved forward for adoption. Currently the townships are adopting it as well. All municipalities did participate in this. They just need to now adopt it. In order to continue to reimbursement, we need to extend the contract. So that's why we're looking for the extension.
Okay. Discussion or questions?
I'll make the motion.
Second? Second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried.
Chair, forgive me with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Resolution 716, amending the 2025 to 2030 Capital Improvement Program, amending capital project number 675, Sheriff's Office Axon Jail Body Camera Purchase, amending the 2025 Capital Fund Budget, Ulster County Sheriff. Under Sheriff Mullins.
So, over the past year or so, we've been upgrading our body cameras inside the jail facility. We're probably one of the few jails in the state that have body cams on our corrections officers, which I think is very important to do. So this is just increasing our body cams. Basically, the old ones, the Panasonics, are dying on us. They're $7,000 to $8,000 to replace the camera, and this would put us all on the same system. So it's just adding the rest of the cameras to the system that we currently have.
Counselor, next question, yes.
I'm often a Nolan Axon. I'm wondering if you think it's feasible that a local or New York State company exists that could land these contracts, or is that just not something in the near future?
I'd have to do some research on that. The way Axon is it's a one-stop shop. So if an officer pulls a taser out or deploys the firearm, it immediately turns on all the body cameras around them, and it just makes for a smoother transition when it comes to, you know, keeping track of everybody and making sure there's accountability. As far as any other companies in the state, I don't think there is. It's something that we can certainly look into and check out, but I don't think there is a company like that.
I ask because if there was, they'd probably apply for this contract. My thought is economic development departments of counties could help us see potential businesses and growth industries by knowing there's no camera companies in New York. Maybe that's an area economic development can encourage. I'll talk to Kevin about that, but that's why I'm a no. I think it's crucial, and the fact that they're so big makes their equipment even better.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say, typically I'm a no, but because we only have a few people here, I'll be a yes, but on the floor I'll be a no. I just don't want to stall it.
Any other discussion or questions? A motion to adopt the resolution? Second? All those in favor? Anyone opposed? The motion is carried in. Resolution 718, amending the 2025-2030 Capital Improvement Program, amending Capital Project 616, Sheriff's Office Axon Patrol, body-worn cameras, amending the 2025 capital budget. Sheriff's Department.
So we hired some new security guards and some new deputy sheriffs, so we have to outfit them with body cameras for their daily use. So it's just adding body cameras to our existing contract for security and patrol.
Any discussion or questions?
Okay. Make the motion.
Second. All those in favor?
No for consistency.
Okay. Opposed?
Yeah.
And motion's carried. Resolution 720, establishing Capital Project 710, Law Enforcement Equipment, amending the 2025 Capital Fund Budget, Ulster County Sheriff.
This is the sonar. Deputy Sire, you want to talk a little bit about making sure this sonar equipment that we are trying to purchase?
Our old sonar is probably 17 years old. And obviously, with electronics, technology changes by the day. The marine sonic is probably top of the line. When we got our old sonar to J.W. Fisher, it was mediocre, middle of the line. Technology is just obsolete now. It's an issue of, do we dive a whole bunch of divers, or do we do a sonar search and deploy one guy? It's much safer to use sonar now. And what I applied for to the marine sonic is probably so it's just a safety issue and clears the scene up faster, you know, rather than he's out there, the victim's out there. we can search an area and find them in an hour rather than a day.
Any other discussion or questions? Okay, motion.
I'll make the motion.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Resolution 722, amending the 2025 to 2030 Capital Improvement Program. Establishing Capital Project 719, Axon In-Car Camera Systems.
Great.
Amending the 2025 Capital Fund Budget, Ulster County Sheriff.
So currently we have in all of our patrol vehicles, we have Panasonic in-car cameras. It's like I said before, we're going away from the Panasonic because they're just too costly with repairs and the technology just isn't there. So we're using $211,000 from grant money to offset this cost that we got from New York State. So basically it replaces our in-car cameras so that it's a better video quality, like I said, for transparency. That's really what it comes down to.
And it works with other departments, correct?
Yes.
So discussion or questions? Motion to adopt the resolution.
Make the motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor? Opposed? Aye. Motion carried.
I'll be opposed.
He's opposed. Resolution 724, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $5,500, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into the county, New York Communications Company, Inc., Ulster County Sheriff.
So we have portable radios for each officer, and over the years we either send some radios back to turn them in to kind of keep the cost down, but when we get more officers, we need to get more radios. So then it's a constant back and forth. Instead of having radios sitting on shelves that we're paying for, we send them back. And then when we need them, we have to come back and get it reapproved because it amends the contract. So that's all that is.
Discussion or questions?
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor? Opposed? Motion's carried. Resolution 725, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $23,013, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the County Tyler Technologies, Inc., Sheriff's Department.
This is our records management system and our LEARN, which is law enforcement records, and basically we're just upgrading some technology in that.
Motion.
Second. All those in favor? Opposed? Motion's carried. Resolution 726, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $23,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county, Bambini Pediatrics, Ulster County Sheriff.
So Bambini Pediatrics is the company that we use. It's in Dutchess County, and that's where we send for COVID testing. During the pandemic, it was our only place in the area that we can get rapid testing done, and they were our go-to for all testing, and we still have an issue inside the jail where we have to rapid test because otherwise we're shutting whole housing units down and sending people different locations. So this pretty much is the only place where we get that rapid testing. So this is our contract with them to continue just in case we do need it.
Okay. Discussion or questions? Mr. Maloney?
Just curious, if the state or the feds hand down our protocol for COVID, our approach to COVID, or do we come up with that in-house?
Well, there's two. So, yes, the state does hand down protocols, and then we do have an in-house policy that we adhere to, which is usually right in line with the state.
Any other further questions? Motion?
Motion.
Second? All those in favor? Opposed? Motion carried. All right. Motion to adjourn?
The motion.
Second? All in favor? Meeting adjourned. Thank you.